You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey, listeners. Dawn Sarah here with a fancy new intro featuring many of your voices. Thank you so much for participating in that fun project. This week's episode is full of extremes and edges because it's an interview with Rain DeGray, the amazing fetish porn star. She talks all about extreme BDSM scenes and things like breath play and lots of edge play. She talks about injuries and privilege as a popular porn star. And she also talks about a lot of the heteronormativity and the gender stereotypes that exist, especially within like our mainstream society and porn. But I just want to give you a heads up that there is going to be talk about passing out, about injuries, and about some pretty intense BDSM scenes. So I thought that would actually be a really fun thing for everyone to listen to headed into the holiday. Nice little contrast to some of that extra fluffy family time and or a little stress relief if the holidays are a source of pain or distress for you. I also want to let you know, I was reading this really interesting story the other day about celebrities getting caught having sex in public, and I read that a couple of years ago at Coachella, which is a huge music festival that happens in California, that the actor Gerard Butler started making out with this hot brunette, and they decided it was time to get it on. And so he pulled her into the sexiest of all sexy places, a porta potty. If you're looking for a really hot, sexy place to get it on and you don't want it to be a porta potty, you might want to check out Hotels by Day, who have generously and wonderfully sponsored this podcast episode. You can go to hotelsbyday.com to book a sexy day stay, or if you just kind of need to get away for the holidays, that's also a fantastic place to go where you can get a hotel from morning until evening, kind of the opposite of a normal hotel stay. And of course, listeners, you get 5% off if you use code SGR5OFF for Sex Gets Real, SGR5OFF at hotelsbyday.com. I also want to remind you, we're starting a new confessions series. I'm going to be featuring your confessions and stories and episodes throughout 2017. There will be themes each and every month. The January theme is firsts. So I want confessions and stories from you on firsts. And it doesn't have to be your traditional kind of PIV type intercourse story. I'm looking for all kinds of firsts. The first time you had your gender recognized, or the first time you experienced heartbreak. You can go to sexgetsreal.com/EP140 for episode 140 to read all the details on how to submit and record your confession and what the guidelines are. Future themes will be featured in the Sex Gets Real newsletter, so also make sure you're on that newsletter. And now, I hope you're ready for this very juicy conversation with Rain DeGray. Let me give you just a little bit of background on Rain, and then we will dive right into the interview. So Rain DeGray is an international educator, writer, presenter, and performer that's been teaching kink and sex education classes since 2009. After getting her start as a fetish model and a pro dom, she was motivated to branch out into education, something that she's super passionate about and we talk about in this interview. She's taught a huge variety of topics at lots of different places like Harvard University and Passionate You and Kink Academy that Princess Callie runs. And her work's been featured on Playboy TV and in the Seattle Erotic Arts Festival. And of course, if you look up Rain DeGray, you can see some of the amazing, hot, intense BDSM scenes that she's done with kink.com. So here we are with Rain. Welcome to Sex Gets Real, Rain. I am so excited for this conversation, and I really appreciate you making time for us.
Oh, wait. Thank you, my dear. We've been trying to do this for about 2 years. I'm not going to lie. I'm busy. You're busy. We got in touch on Twitter, I believe.
Yes.
And I was like, let's do a podcast. And here we are 2 years later making it happen.
When I got your message on Twitter a little while ago saying, let's do this, I was like, yay, the stars aligned.
I never forget anything. It was on the list. And it's just, you know how life happens.
Yep.
What it was is that for 3 years, I worked for Insects. And Insects, 6 months ago, 5 months ago, relocated to Portland. And for the 3 years I was working for Insects, I loved that job. It was 10 hours a day, 6 days a week. I worked Monday through, we had live shows, so on Saturdays. So Monday through Saturday, you know, you get up at 7 in the morning, you pick up the model. We were shooting, you know, 5-6 days a week all the time. And I wasn't really able to do anything other than work for Insects. I was a photographer, talent booker, wardrobe, chauffeur, production assistant, handler, top, bottom, copywriter, social media, like that was all I did. So once Insects relocated to Portland, because the Bay Area, I live in the Bay Area, and it has now surpassed New York as the most expensive place in all of the United States to live.
Yeah.
And Insects simply could not afford to live here. So I'm not working for Insects anymore. I have a little bit more free time. I'm doing a lot more classes and writing, and I had never forgotten you. And I said to myself, I said, let's make this happen. And you've been doing quite well the past 2 years, too. It's really taken off. It's been nice to see the energy you've been putting into this.
Yeah, it's been a really fantastic, fun journey. And I've had a chance to talk to amazing people like yourself. And yeah, it's a dream to get to share this kind of information with the world and make it fun while we do it. And yeah, I love it.
I kind of think that's the meaning of life, is helping people and doing things you're passionate about.
Yeah.
That's why I get up in the morning. I want to help others around me, and I also want to do something that's exciting, and I don't think those are unreasonable goals.
And I agree.
If you do it right, you can usually pull that off, and I've been managing to do it for 9 years now. So,
yeah, one of the things that really struck me as I was reading through your blog and listening to interviews you've given and just kind of like taking a look at your Twitter is how unapologetically you are about doing the things that you love and not feeling ashamed of it and just like saying fuck yes to stuff that you really are excited about and want to try and want to do and even like giving other people advice and permission on living for yourself and pursuing your desires and stop worrying about what other people are going to say and just like go all in. And I love how just completely unapologetic you are about these are the things that I love doing and that feel good and I'm going to chase them.
Oh, it's one of the guiding principles of my life. And it's shaped me as a person. And here's the thing, is that we walk around like a white-knuckled ball of tension, so worried about people judging us, and we put so much effort to put up these false masks because we don't want anyone to know the real us. And I realize it's like you have a mask for your family, you have a mask for your friends, you have a mask for your lovers and your partners, and you're putting all of this effort to maintain these false personas to like please people. And I'm like, I can't. I refuse. And I used to walk around and I was self-conscious and I thought everyone was judging me and my outfit sucked, my hair was horrible, there was bird shit on my head. And the most freeing realization I had is that no one is bothering to judge you because they're way too busy thinking about themselves to ever take the time to get their head out of their ass to judge you. You're free. And I looked at my white-knuckled hand with all these fucks I was holding, and I just opened my hand and I dropped all the fucks. And I stopped giving a fuck. And it was like being reborn. And realizing we don't have that much time on this planet. Every day that you have is a blessing. Tomorrow you could be hit by a bus and die. And when you look back on your life, you want to look back on a life where you made compromises and weren't honest to yourself and lived a lie and put all of this mental energy and like keeping up this facade? Well, why would you? What a waste of the life you've been given. And I realized that, A, I truly don't give a fuck what anyone else thinks about me. And B, every day is a gift. It's a blessing. And why would I put my desires on hold? Because I'm worried about other people judging me? No, my friend. And really, all of the classes I teach, all the articles, all the interviews I'm doing, what I'm trying to say is own your power, explore your awesome, don't give a fuck about what other people think about you, don't worry about judgment, and live your life to the fullest. Because when I'm old and in a, you know, peeing in a pair of Depends in a wheelchair, I want to close my eyes and flip back through the mental scrapbook of my life and look at all of these amazing experiences that I had the privilege of getting to try. And if I hadn't given myself permission, I wouldn't have that. And most people are afraid to live life. You know, you're working a job you hate, you come home, you eat some crappy, you know, TV dinner, you watch some bad reality show, go home, like fall asleep, and then wake up the next day and do it all over again, and you're not living your life. My view is that your body is the greatest toy you will ever be given. And most people are afraid to play with it. They are ashamed. They're scared. They don't even know how their own body works. Why? Yeah. Why would you not get, you're stuck in your body your entire life. Why? You don't get another one. You might as well get to know what this body works, how it works. And I have explored my body to its fullest, and I have not regretted a single moment. It's been a delightful journey. I'm not done yet. I want to try all of the things. My motto is more.
And I think that's very apparent. Like, I feel like one of the, when someone says your name to me, I think, holy shit, extremes. You know, like, you've taken yourself and your limits and your body to these incredible edges and then beyond, and like done that over and over again. And I feel like that's one of the themes that also comes up when you think like Rain de Grey is pushing limits and going beyond what you thought you could, and just like taking your body as far as it will go to see what happens. And I admire that so much, because I feel like it requires a lot of courage to do. But there's also just something so awe-inspiring of like letting go and just seeing what the fuck happens.
That's exactly how I do it. I'm curious, and there's a huge disconnect between your brain and your body. And we tend to, most of us, like, other than genital pleasure, but even then people get hung up about that, we tend to live from the chin up a lot of, and like people never really explore their body. And I got really curious to see what I could do with my body. I wanted to see how far I could go. I wanted to see where I could push it and where it could take me. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I am a collection of injuries. I have not been easy on my body. I have a bad knee from a bondage injury. I have a bad rib from wrestling. I have a damaged nerve from handcuffs that never quite came back. I've definitely collected some wounds on the way, and I have been hard on my body. But I really view doing heavy BDSM very similar to being a professional athlete, where you are going to go in, and like, despite the fact that I really take care of myself, I work out every day, I take all of my vitamins, I'm, you know, an organic vegetarian, I do the best I can to maintain my body. I've definitely challenged it, and I don't regret that. Like, it's like, okay, you know, I have a bad right knee from a bonded injury. That's never going to get better. You know, did competitive sexual wrestling, Ultimate Surrender, and Academy Wrestling for 4 years. I cracked a rib because I was training. I had a trainer. I took my wrestling really seriously. I'm a pretty competitive person. I had a fractured hairline crack on my right rib that I just was trying to walk it off. And I trained and competed for another 6 months on a cracked rib. And that didn't heal right. That's always, when I breathe too deep, it catches me, you know. I did notice in the past 2 years, I think, with the more extreme shoots, it's basically guaranteed I will throw up. Like, that's gonna happen. Like, every single time I do a heavy shoot, I try not to puke while the shoot's happening, but occasionally they'll have to let me out of bondage. I will have to go throw up, and we'll get back in the bondage. And it's That's my body's way of responding. And then when the shoot's over, I definitely throw up and then I pass out and I'm unconscious till the next day. But it's like being a marathon runner. Like if you've seen marathon and they're doing the marathon and like, there's like that iconic photo of that dude that like puked like half a mile from the finish line. And he's like, we're just going to keep going. And I mean, he's dead on his feet and he's like staggering through the finish line with like vomit down in front of his, and he's like, this is going to happen, you know? And I was like, I admire that level of commitment and dedication because it's like, what's a little puke between friends? There's a goal. I need to get to that goal. If I have to wade through some vomit to get to my goal, it's fine. It's going to happen. Yep. So, there are lots of people that are more extreme than me. Mm-hmm. I just went where my body and brain and inclination naturally went to. And some people are like, that's a high bar. I've seen people do shit where I'm like, my hat's off to you. I could never... Bless you, that's territory not for me. Cattle prods, for instance. The last time I did a cattle prod, I did a Wired Pussy shoot with Aiden Starr. And the bit was that I had to back up into a cattle prod 45 times while she sat on a chair, laughed at me, and masturbated. And I did manage to make all the 45 times I backed up into a cattle prod 45 times. I've never done it since. Maybe... there's a finite amount of cattle prod one has in their life, and I reached it in one day. And I've never since revisited cattle prods. My dear friend London River, who I absolutely adore, I just saw her do a shoot where she had her pussy and asshole cattle prodded. And I said, no, thank you. That's a no. I'm not interested. I do not want a cattle prod on my sphincter. Call me close-minded, but... that's not my bag, baby. So to each their own. Like I've definitely enjoyed what I've done with very little regrets. And if anything, I hope to inspire other people to be less afraid to explore their body. You know, owning your body is so important, and that seems to be so hard for people.
Yes, that is definitely one of the big themes that I see in questions that I get from listeners is fear of asking for what you want or not being sure what their body wants or you know, feeling ashamed of the sensations in their body when certain things happen. And so I love that you're part of what you're doing is around giving permission to people to explore and enjoy their bodies. And
it's very important to me.
It's so important. Yeah. And actually it was interesting because you brought up wrestling, and just a couple of days ago, I got an email from a 27-year-old listener who was saying that he has a wrestling fetish and he feels like he's the only one.
Very common.
Exactly. So I was wondering, for anybody who's into wrestling fetishes, since I know just a teeny bit, but definitely not a lot about that, what advice would you give to someone who's interested in kind of exploring that in a sexual way?
I mean, you know what? I'm going to be honest. The advice I'm going to give for wrestling is the exact same advice I would give for kink in general, which is you are not alone. And thanks to the power of the internet, you will really, that is the greatest fear that all humans have, is that we're trapped in our brains and we're the only one that thinks like us, and we're a weirdo and we're a freak and no one else in the world is like us. That's such a primal fear, to think that you're alone with your wiring and no one could possibly understand you. Mm-hmm. Get thine ass upon the internet and you will see you are not alone. Like the secret is education. Is the world is not going to come knocking on your front door and being like, here's all the magic. You don't even need to get off the couch. We will come and deliver all of the pleasure and magic and excitement to you. And that's where people have issues, is that they're not willing to put in the effort to get the reward. And it's like, you have to be willing to put in the effort. You have to go online. You have to find a sex shop. You have to find classes. You have to find your local dungeon. You have to find your local kinky fetish community. You have to put in the work. Wrestling is such a common fetish. It's a really big one. And if you want to break down, like, why is it that people find wrestling appealing? Well, it's a multitude of things. For one, a lot of men, it's hard work being a dude. As a woman, we get permission to be physically affectionate. We can snuggle with our girlfriends. We have emotional support. We can check in. Like, and guys just have to be a man. And like, they can't touch. They can't be like, the only real permission they have to let the barriers down is when they put their dick in someone. And I'm not being the owner of a penis myself. Like, I believe that one of the reasons that guys fuck, it's not that they're not just horny, but it's the only way they know how to be close to someone. Where we can cuddle, we can snuggle. Like, a dude, it's hard for a dude to walk up and be like, can I get a hug? And, like, can we just, like, cuddle a little bit? So they use penis and vagina as a way to bond with someone. And that's also why guys fight. They fight because fighting and fucking are the only two socially acceptable ways that they can get skin-on-skin contact. That's what society gives them. And you see two dudes, and it's like they don't know how to express their affection, so they get drunk, and they start beating each other. I love you, man. Fuck you. You know, and they and that's, if we were a woman, we'd give each other a hug, and like, you look beautiful today. I love your outfit. How was your day? Guys don't get that luxury. So they have to get physical with each other. And for a guy, when the wrestling fetishists think about this strong, dominant, take-charge woman that can overpower him, that's relaxing to let go and to put the male machismo baggage aside for a second. So when guys like fantasy, it's unfortunate if you're a wrestling fetishist, because I work out, I take care of my body, like, I've got some abs happening, like, I'm in as good shape as I can, and just with my shoulders and my muscular structure, most men can overpower me, no matter how hard, no matter what martial art classes I take. So for guys to want to be overpowered by a woman, they kind of have to hold back, because if a guy's really wrestling against a woman, the odds are he's probably going to win. Mm-hmm. It's a tricky fetish, because then you need to find women that are like, okay, well, I'm willing to wrestle with you and take that risk of personal injury. And for the wrestling, it's sometimes guys can get nervous about penis and vagina. There's a lot of pressure with that. And fetishism takes the pressure of erect penis and vagina, because that's so limiting. And so people do, okay, I have a balloon fetish. And these people, the balloon is the orgasm. The blowing up of the balloon is the fucking. And when the balloon pops, the look on the woman's face as it explodes, that's the orgasm. The tickling, where the woman is immobilized and you start tickling her and she's like gasping and thrashing. It's all sex. I don't care. It's your own flavor of sex. So wrestling is, if you get a little anxious about, like, well, I'm just going to meet a woman and get my dick in her. How do I do that? Oh, I've got this strong, confident, muscular woman, and she takes me down, and she pins me, and she overpowers me, and I try and get free, and, like, our bodies are mashing together. Okay, it's fucking. It's fucking. But you're putting it in spandex, and your genitals aren't out. Sure. Yeah. Okay. But that's what it is. Wrestling is a very, very common one. And a lot of men and women are into it. He's certainly not alone. But you have to be willing to put the effort to do the education. The world isn't going to come to you and be like, here are all your needs and desires met.
Yeah. So one of the things that you were just talking about with these powerful women who are going to kind of overpower you. I know one of the classes that you teach is to help women learn how to tap into their inner dom. And I get a lot of emails from folks who are in heterosexual relationships, and the men really want to be submissive. They want their wives to be more dominant, and or the women are writing in saying, like, my partner asked me to be dominant and I don't know what to do. What are some ways that you recommend for folks who've been socialized female to, like, step into that powerful dom role?
That's an excellent question. And that is one that comes up a lot with my female dominance class. Okay. It's a multitude of things. The first thing that I get when women approach me and they're like, oh gosh, I don't know what to do. I'm like, okay, let's take it back a step. First off, your partner, your husband, your boyfriend, your lover has already asked you to dom them. Therefore, they are in the headspace. Women are like, I don't know how to, you know that they want it. So you're 50% there already. You're not trying to dom someone who's not willing. Like, oh, I don't feel convincing or believable as a dom. Well, your partner obviously does, because they asked that of you. So when you're cutting yourself off and not giving yourself permission to explore something because you don't think that you can own it, the biggest tip that I give newbie female doms when they get nervous, blindfolds. I swear to God, there is nothing worse when you're trying to dom someone and your bottom's eager eyes are tracking your every movement through the room and you're on display and you're like, stop staring at me. This is too much pressure, man. Like, I no longer have to dom with blindfolds, but I swear by blindfolds because first off, you're giving your bottom sensory deprivation. So it's easier for them to get in headspace. Second off, you're no longer in the spot with them tracking you, where your hand's going, what's happening, what's doing. And then you're like, oh, fuck it, I can't. It's too much pressure. Blindfolds. And the other thing that I recommend for newbie doms is a giant-ass toy bag. I can now dom people with nothing but my hands and my mind. But in the beginning, when I first started out, I wasn't necessarily confident. A huge toy bag, if you just lay down 20 things and hit this person twice with each thing, you've just sucked up almost 40 minutes. Like, so blindfold someone, come in, could negotiate, communicate. Don't just expect that all of a sudden you're going to own your powers, this awesome dom and 6-inch stilettos, and, you know, you don't need to breathe and you're in a corset and you never sweat and you're flawless and you suck up all the energy in the room. That's a cartoon. That's not realistic. You can't dom like a cartoon. I'm not a cartoon. I'm not going to put on 6-inch heels and whittle down my waist to 14 inches and, like, never sweat and fart rose petals because that's not real. That's not honest. And if you're expecting to be dommed by a cartoon, everyone's going to end up disappointed. I used to practice my lines. I would be like, I'm going to dom someone for an hour. You know, and I would construct that entire hour of exactly what I was going to do. And then I would come up with lines of what it was I was going to say. And I'd go in the mirror and I would practice. You have to put in effort. It's effortless now, but like, I'm going to dom someone for an hour. These are the activities I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to ramp up to. These are the things we're going to try. These are the lines I'm going to try. I'm going to practice this line in the mirror. Do I look silly? Does it feel natural? And that was literally how I broke down my early doming. Was I would take a piece of paper and construct the scene. What's the warm up? What's the build up? What's the final act? What's the cool down? And the more you do it, the easier it gets. But the biggest thing with doming is own your power. Know that you are fucking awesome. Know that you are worthy of submission. Drop the baggage of like, oh, it's not good enough, it's not convincing enough, I don't know what I'm doing. Here's the thing, potential lady doms, nobody knows what they're doing. We're just doing the best. You know when you're a kid and you think adults are these infallible gods and adults have it all figured out and they know what they're doing and you just look up to them with wide eyes and then you get to be an adult and you realize the adults didn't know what they were doing. They were fucking guessing as they went along. So was everyone. So that's basically the entire class. That's my 2-hour class. Own your power. Acknowledge you're awesome. Know that your partner wants you to be a dom or they wouldn't have asked in the first place. So they already view you as the potential to have a dom. Get a bunch of toys and use a blindfold. Mm-hmm. And therein the magic will happen. The more you do it, the easier it gets. I promise you that.
I stumbled on the power of the blindfold when I was in my very first kind of dom situation, because in that first time I had that submissive and he kept staring at me.
Yes, they
and
stare.
I felt like, oh shit, that means like I can't at any point like just relax for a minute. And so the next time I just put the blindfold on him and I felt immediately so much more ease. Like he thought something amazing was about to happen and I was just like sitting there having a sip of water.
But that's the thing. It's the anticipation. It's the buildup. It's you're making it exciting. Like for you, what's going to happen? You're like, well, I'm hydrating my throat is what's happening.
Right.
But for all you know, I'm shooting glitter out my ass.
Right. Well, one of the things that you mentioned earlier when we were talking about like limits and edges and kind of like going to the very edge is you said, I want to experience all the things. And so I'm wondering, what are some things that you have not yet done or experienced that you would like to?
I'm gonna answer that honestly. I have done all of the things I was crucified. They took a backhoe. They dug me. They crucified me upside down, put a plastic bag over my head with a breathing tube, buried me underground. With a vibrator on my pussy, a dildo inside me, and caned my calves. So I came crucified, inverted, buried underground while being vibrated and caned. I've had orgies. I've had fivesomes. I've done really epic BDSM scenes where I have hallucinated. I have done forced orgasm sessions until I puked and passed out and was revived. And they did CPR, brought me back, did more forced orgasms until I lost consciousness. I have had every sexual partner and every experience I have desired. Like, I'm really into vomit play. I had a partner for 5 years that allowed me to face fuck her until she puked. I have been choked unconscious. I've choked other people unconscious. I have done every sort of exhibitionism and sexual activity. I've been at this for 9 years, and mm-hmm. I've been doing it, putting my back into it. And I haven't fucked twins. No, I mean, I guess, but other than that, like, I mean, I was, my ex-daddy at the time, who was a director for Kink, ended up in the middle of our relationship dating Skin Diamond, who is so stunningly hot. It's insane. She has no pores. Like, she's
so amazing.
I know. She's had sex with me repeatedly off camera, which, I mean, it's one thing when someone has sex with you on camera, that doesn't really count. But off camera, when someone consensually bangs you, she might be a half Scottish, half black girl, but she does a 12-year-old Japanese girl voice, and she's really tiny. So you fold her in the bed, and you tuck her little knees up near her ears, and you start fucking her, and she starts talking in the Harajuku, like, Japanese girl voice. And I'm like, well, I now know what it's like to fuck a 12-year-old Japanese girl. Like, if I had any curiosity, it might be a half-black, half-Scottish porn star named Skin Diamond, but it sure seems like I'm fucking a 12-year-old Japanese girl. So either if there's something that I was interested in doing, I've done it. I'm not interested in scat play. I've not done that. But other than that, if there's... I double-fisted a guy once. I was really curious if I could get this guy. He's like, hey, can we do a session? I can take two fists in my ass. Well, let's try that. Let me take off my ring, because it's kind of an expensive ring. It's got diamonds in the setting, and I didn't want, you know, poop in the ring. So I didn't want to lose it in his ass either, because then I'd have to try and fish it out.
Right.
And if you can take two of my hands inside your anal cavity, that ring could be up there for a while.
Yes.
If there's something I wanted to do, I've done it with zest and relish and great joy in my perverted little heart. Like, I cannot think of a... Oh, okay, you know what? I've never gone to suck dick at a glory hole because I'm a very STI averse. I'm... one of the things with porn that people don't realize is that it is so much safer to do porn. Mm-hmm. Everyone in porn is tested every 14 days. The tests are the absolute best tests you can get. You get results in 24 hours. And I would never go to a bar, get my drink on, pick up a civilian, like, go home and have sloppy drunken sex. Like, the great thing about porn, I'm privileged. Like, I'm one of, there's actually, when you think of porn stars, you think of women that are damaged and their daddy touched them when they were young and they have drug issues and they can't get their life together. And I'm not saying that people like that don't exist. They don't last long. And the people that stick around in the industry are legitimate sexual perverts who are in touch with their sexuality and want to explore. Here's an example. I did a gangbang for Bound Gangbangs for Kink. Do you have any idea how hard it is to make a gangbang happen? Tom is not available on Tuesday. Harry can only do Thursdays. Sam can't get a babysitter. No one can meet on the same day. If they do meet, yep. There's no guarantee their dicks will work. There's no guarantee they've got clean paperwork. Like, you know, there's no guarantee that even if you can get five dudes to show up at your house at the same time and not flake out, and they all happen to have working dicks, they're probably not going to be as easy on the eyeballs as your fantasy would be. I had the privilege, and let me tell you, it's a privilege, to get paid money to safely explore my sexual fantasies in a way I never would have been able to achieve. Kink approached me, do you want to do a gangbang? All you have to do is show up. Everyone will be tested. Everyone is pretty to put your eyeballs on. Everyone's dick works. All you have to do is sit back and allow the pleasure to happen to you. That's a privilege. Like, you don't, I'm sorry, you don't get, and then we're going to pay you money after that, after giving you this amazing experience that you would not have been able to construct yourself. Yeah. You can then pay your mortgage for the month. Ta-da! Like, are you, seriously? So I got into porn because I wanted to explore, and I wanted to do the more extreme things. I wanted to be crucified, inverted, buried upside down on the side of a mountain. You know, like, you can't, they needed a backhoe. They needed to, like, a crew of eight people. It took them 5 hours with a tractor to dig out a hole big enough to stick me in upside down and bury me. Like, mm-hmm. I can't go on Craigslist. Who wants to bury me upside down? I can't make that happen. Are you kidding me? So yeah. being a model allowed me to live out my sexual desires in a way that is just, I'm so grateful and I'm so lucky. And most people will probably not get the privilege of doing that. And I never take that for granted. And people, you know, try and shame me. Oh, you've done porn. And it's like, fuck, man. Are you kidding? Like, you would chop off a foot to get the experiences that I've managed to accumulate over the years. And I don't regret any of them. One of the mottos that I always have lived my life by is that I refused to do a shoot on screen that I would not be willing to do free off camera.
Yeah.
And I would turn down work if it wasn't the right fit for me or it wasn't something I didn't want to do. And all of my film footage that you see, that's something that I would be doing consensually, not paid, off camera. Because I was just exploring stuff that was interesting to me. I really got into exploring a lot of TSs. I've done a lot of TS work. Like, I have the pussy privilege. You can get away with a lot with boobs. Like, I have less physical strength. I have less economic power. I have a shelf life. Women's currency tends to be their looks and their body. That currency fades. A 45-year-old man is respectable. A 45-year-old woman is past her prime, and she'd better have a ring on her finger, or no one even wants to touch 45-year-old female pussy.
Yeah.
So a woman's currency, which is her sexuality and her looks, is very, very valuable for a short period of time. It is a rapidly deflating currency. So I get it from both the male and female side. Like, mm-hmm. men are a lot more respected in our society. They earn more money to our dollar. They're physically safer. But you know what? Women get the cuddling. We get the emotional intimacy. We get the touching. If I have a bad day, I can call up a girlfriend, tell her all about it. She will totally emotionally support me. If I'm hanging out with my girlfriends, I can snuggle with them. I get all of the physical touch I desire, and men don't get that privilege. So it's, I mean, the battle of the sexes is challenging, yeah. without a doubt. But I am grateful that my vagina has allowed me to acquire all of these experiences that would have been harder for me to acquire if I had a dick, let's be honest.
Yeah. Well, I would love to circle back to talk about breath play in just a minute. But first, one of the things that I want to talk about while we're on this topic of just all the amazing things you've done and how proud and grateful you are for them is I see you taking on folks on Twitter who are trying to save porn stars or sex workers. And you had this amazing tweet on December 8th about, I know you are conflicted by how much you want to fuck me, so you are shoving a Bible at me to try and quiet the lustful thoughts in your head. And, you know, I think one of the things that's so amazing about this is it's so clear that you are not ashamed of these amazing things you've been through. And so there's no shame or guilt coming through when you can take on these conversations because you're coming from a place of power.
Mm-hmm. I have the privilege that I don't think a lot of other performers in the industry have, which is I give no fucks. And a lot of girls do this heavy PR jazz hands, and you mustn't upset a fan. But they're doing it because of the revenue, and I desire cock all the time, and whatever anyone says to me, I'll never call them on it. And like, oh yes, I'm just a, you know, vacant three-hole, you know, cock whore. And like, that's their pitch. That's what they're marketing themselves as. I refuse. I would rather have less money and put up with people's bullshit. Like, I will not meekly like acquiesce and roll over and show belly, and I will have no, and I, do I lose fans? I certainly do. Mm-hmm. Am I told that I'm like rude and not friendly and not appreciative of my fans? Here's the thing. Anyone, any gender that approaches me as an asshole, I'm going to call you on it. And I have no problem doing that. I'm certain that it's cost me shoots and revenue and money and fans over the years, but my guiding principle is to be true to myself, no matter what. I'm going to be true to myself. And if I get Christians that want to save me, I get people that want to disparage me, I will call you out. And I've been told that I'm snarky online and I don't have a really good PR presence and that many other performers are much nicer to their fans. And I'm like, I'm nice to people that don't approach me like a fool. But if you approach me like a fool, I have zero reservations of calling you out on it. And if that shortens my career or makes people less interested in me as a person, I'm okay with that. Because in the end, I'm being true to myself. And that's my most important guiding principle.
I love that so much. It's very refreshing and rare. So I hope everybody listening will go check out your amazing Twitter and all of the conversations that you have there.
My brain really works. My brain is constantly, before Twitter even happened, I get sentences and fragments and thoughts and concepts, and I get hundreds of them a day. They just pop up like soap bubbles. I'm always thinking. Like, I don't ever get bored or lonely because I'm really entertained in my brain. My brain is a fun place to hang out at. And Twitter is a really great medium for me because I just use it as a scratch pad to just put down my thoughts and my concepts. And, like, my thoughts pop out in, like, Twitter-sized pieces. So, yeah, Twitter has always really worked well for me. And I don't ever go back. I use Twitter as a diary and a scratch. It's just a notepad, you know, mm-hmm. And then I go on with my day. But, yeah, people do tell me I'm a little snarky on my Twitter. And then I laugh.
Right. You're like, ha, ha, ha.
Yes. The snark tastes delicious. No, no,
that's
no, no.
Right. It's got a nice finish on the palate.
Like a really good, dry, extra sharp cheddar. Mm.
That's right. So you're talking about like being choked out and doing breath play and suffocation. And I know one of the classes you teach is also around breath play. And that's definitely a space that even inside kink communities can be very edgy and something that people put a lot of warning labels on. And
That's bullshit.
Yeah, and so share with us.
Okay, well, you know what that is? That's Jay Wiseman. And bless Jay's heart. Jay is a bit of a busybody. He has a lot of time on his hands. He's almost OCD in the things he focuses on. As an example, he decided to test the safeness of safety shears for bondage incidents. And he literally went out and bought 250 of these safety shears and cut each one with a slice to see if they had a failure rate. And when he gets focused on something, he gets very meticulous about it. And years ago, he decided breath play is bad. And Jay Wiseman wrote SM 101, which is supposed to be the kinky Bible. I think it's somewhat dated information by now. And it was also written from a man's perspective. And I mean, it's been out for 30 years. And his thoughts and concepts, this stuff was not as written about 30 years ago, 25 years ago when the book came out. And this one man's specific concepts and thoughts really did influence kink as a whole for a long time. And he is against breath play. And what he is not realizing, the counter argument to that, is that I did wrestling. I've done jiu-jitsu. I do chokeouts. Like, I do tap-outs. Like, if you watch any MMA fighting and wrestling, choking out to the point that someone either taps or loses consciousness happens all over the time in judo academies all over the United States. Now, as we are speaking, someone's being choked unconscious. Mm-hmm. And people get very twitchy around breath play. And I don't get to teach the class that much because people get really riled about it. But here's the thing. If you're doing kink, it's like getting on a roller coaster. Everyone gets on the roller coaster and they want the adrenaline and the fear and the terror and the excitement, but no one actually wants to die. Mm-hmm. And when you do activities, they can be, I mean, I am a mess of injuries that I've accumulated over 9 years of pushing my body as far as it could go. And I have no problem with breath play. I feel that it can be done very safely. I've been knocked unconscious countless times. So much I can't even keep track. I've done it to others. it's a huge trust thing. It's, mm-hmm. you're literally putting your life in someone else's hands. And therein lies the rush. And done well, when you're knocked unconscious with breath play, even though it's about 15 seconds before you come to, it feels like it's, half an hour a day, like time folds, things get weird. I was choked out and you come to and your whole body has like these convulsions. You feel like you're in an earthquake, the whole room is shaking. And it's you settling back in your body and you can get visions. And I'm sure that people, okay, you're cutting off blood to your brain. Your brain is starved. It's not for everyone. Maybe I have a bunch of brain cells to spare. I don't know. All I know is that I've been choked out so many times I lose track and I'm not drooling on myself and I can still tie my shoelaces and function. So I would theorize it's not as risky as people think it to be. And for me, the exhilaration, despite the body rush that you get, is the trust. Mm-hmm. And in all of the chokeouts I've had, I've never had anything go wrong. I've never broken anything, damaged anything, bruised anything, bitten a tongue, lost a tooth, had any brain impairment. I'm sure that I might feel otherwise if something did happen, but I tend to explore something until my body tells me it's not safe. Which is how I took black eyes off the table. I went through a black eye period, and I was rocking deliberate, purposeful black eyes for 6 weeks. And I thought they were beautiful and really cute. I looked like a little panda. I mean, they weren't bad black eyes. It wasn't like my eyes will swell shut, but like you can land the fist right in the socket, and it can cause some bruising underneath the eye. It's mm-hmm. freaking adorable as far as I'm concerned. And after a month and a half of being kept in black eyes, the same partner doing the same blow landed the impact slightly different, and I got Bell's palsy. And my entire face dropped off, my left side of my face, and it took about 3 months for the nerves to come back. And when I'd blow my nose, I couldn't feel it on the left side. And as the nurse came back, it burns, so it felt like there were fire ants on the left side of my face for weeks. Oh. And when I went to the doctor, and the doctor's like, yeah, you have Bell's palsy, which is temporary, but you have to stop getting punched in the head. And I took black eye play off the table. So I will explore something until I realize it's no longer safe or it's not working. And I've had no issues with breath play. And I can no longer do black eyes, which saddens me because I really liked my black eyes. But Bell's palsy is a pain in the butt, and nerve damage when you're blowing your nose and you can only feel it out of one side is a very jarring feeling.
I can imagine.
So no with the black eyes. Yes with the breath play.
Awesome. Well, I hope that gives permission to people who have had some curiosity around it to take a class or to do some reading around it or meet other people.
There's so much research with breath play. And it's like we unconsciously do breath play to ourselves. When you're coming and you're starting to reach that point of orgasm, next time because we know you masturbate. Next time you're masturbating, check out your breathing pattern as you get closer to the orgasm. Right there, you're performing breath play on yourself, even if you're not aware of it. And by holding back your air temporarily, it does increase the feelings of lightheadedness. It makes your orgasm more powerful. We all do breath play. If those really hot scenes where a guy is fucking a girl and he's just impaling her on his dick and he has her spread, he puts his hand down and he clamps it over her face. And he's shutting off either her mouth or her nose or both. And that's a form of breath play right there. Like, it doesn't have mm-hmm. to be full unconsciousness, but taking someone's air, breath play done by dick worship, when you have your dick all the way down someone's mouth hole, they cannot breathe. And the only molecule of oxygen allowed in their lungs is what you permit to pass through your dick. You're owning their face hole. You're owning their lungs. You're owning their air. There's nothing more powerful than being in control of whether or not someone can breathe. Mm-hmm. And anytime someone does a deep throat scene, that's breath play right there. And until the dick is removed, you're not breathing. And you can convulse, you can beg, you can weep. Like, you know, I really like strap on fucking someone's face, and I like to make my ladies wear really heavy eyeliner. So the more,
oh, yes.
The more I face fuck them, the more they look like a sad panda. Oh,
yes.
Love it. Love it.
I want those black streaks.
Yes. You will not be wearing waterproof mascara around me. Fuck no. The runnier, the better. I want you to look like a bedraggled raccoon by the time I'm done with you.
I love that. Yeah, yeah. Just those elements of being able to have that power. And also the power that comes with someone giving you that is pretty impressive.
It's exhilarating and it's beautiful. And it's for me, it's a real time continuum shift where you're leaving the mundane realities of like, did I take out the trash? I need to buy more cat food. And you're taking a time out for that. And for me, when I really get in the zone is either a top or the bottom, time shifts. Things move different. Like, you know, I can taste adrenaline on my tongue. My heartbeat changes and I'm stepping into another realm, and the trust and the respect and the freedom to either give yourself over or take charge is exhilarating and captivating. And it's why I keep coming back.
I love that. That's amazing. So we have just a couple of minutes left, and I'd love to actually circle back to before we started recording. You said something that I just think is super important for us to talk about, and listeners have heard this many different ways, but I really loved the way that you phrased it. So you've been doing a lot more writing and education lately. You're writing for Tantus now, and one of the reasons that you're doing a lot more writing and education is because of piracy and because of kind of the free element of people expecting free porn. There's been fewer and fewer porn shoots, so there's fewer and fewer opportunities for paid work in porn for you. And I would love for you to just share a little bit more about that for our listeners so that we can just kind of drive that point home of like paying for your entertainment.
Well, I mean, it's a huge problem, and it's not just in porn. It's in the entertainment worldwide. To this day, I have never pirated anything. Every song I have, I've paid for. Every book I've ever had, I've paid for. Every movie I've ever seen, I've paid for. I won't watch pirated stuff. And it's the principle of it, it's ethics of it. But more than that, like, we have a generation of people that have grown up on the computer. And the computer is a magic box. And out of that magic box flows free entertainment. And it doesn't occur to them. Why would you ever pay for porn or a movie or music, songs, like albums? Just, you're a fool if you would pay for that. And what it is that's short-term gain for long-term loss. And no one's going to think about it until there is no more porn. But it's like, that's where we're approaching. The pirate sites are huge. There is less and less opportunities. There's less and less shoots. The budgets are smaller. Like, it's going to become more and more amateur. And because people get hung up about porn. And even people that would be like, oh, it feels unethical to pirate a song, are like, well, I'm not a freak. I'm not a weirdo. Like, to actually open up your wallet and take out a credit card and purchase porn is depressing for a lot of people. Like, they're like, oh, I'm a loser that I have to do that. So I'll just steal it and watch it for free, and that makes me not a loser. Mm-hmm. The thing is that renting a location costs money. Hiring a videographer costs money. Electricity costs money. Computers, video cameras, wardrobe, makeup, like props. Like, that doesn't all just appear magic, you know, and no one wants to pay. And I have been in the industry for 9 years, and I have seen it shrunk. Rates have shrunk, shoots have shrunk. Back in August, Kink cut back from 90 shoots to 45 shoots. They halved their shoots.
Wow.
They can't, because it's shrinking. Every year it's shrinking. And consumers are just not realizing that because there's still a trickle, but the trickle is slowing. And another 10 years, it's just going to be cam shows and like girls doing their own site, and you can buy clips off of them. Mm-hmm. But the era of the big companies of like Wicked and Vivid and like doing these massive like productions where it's like an experience you're getting, we're not getting that anymore because the market has shifted. And I don't think that consumers are going to even give a fuck until they run out of porn. Mm. But the ironic thing is that's what's happening. The tube sites, which are the pirate sites that are hosting the porn, are running out of places to steal porn from because they've devastated the market so much that they now have a customer base that is expecting to come to the tube sites and get free porn. The tube sites have scraped the bottom of the barrel so thoroughly, mm-hmm. they are now being forced, in order to keep their customer base, to shoot, pay for, produce, and create their own porn they then have to give away for free on their sites. But they weren't, like, for years, they made revenue, and now they're like, oops. So they're actually having to pay performers, but it's not going to be enough. Like, it's...
Yeah.
And I had a glorious ride. I really got in the tail end, and, like, I... have a lot of respect for, and I used to work with Mark Davis, and he told me back in the day when he was doing porn, because Mark Davis was in the industry for 30 years, like, that's what he's done. He used to make $20,000 a month. He could do 2 shoots in 1 day. And he's like, it's not like that anymore. You can't, like, porn performers are scraping by. I mean, you're lucky to get, what, 1 or 2 shoots a month. Like, you mm-hmm. cannot make a living off of it anymore. And I'm sad to watch consumers' greed destroy creativity. And Hollywood is having the exact same issue. They don't know how to stop piracy. And it's affecting everything, everywhere. And I'm curious to see what the end result will be. I do know that for porn, what we're going to be is... individual custom clips for sale and cam shows, because those are the things that are harder to pirate. But your big budget porn, that's a whole fantasy, that's, you know, multi-shoot scripts and actors, and that's going to be much harder to find. Pay for your porn or you don't have porn.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you have any interest in kind of moving into that more like self-produced space, or are you enjoying this shift that you've been doing into, I mean, first of all, your blog is amazing. So for anybody who hasn't checked out your blog, they should definitely go. You had one about like loving your body. That was amazing. But, and then your classes. So mm-hmm. is that a space where you really want to be putting more of your time and energy over the next couple of years?
I am, because it's harder to pirate. I would love to produce, but then you're getting a location, you're getting lights, you're getting camera, you're doing editing, you're doing this, and then the second you release it into the wilds of the internet, it immediately gets pirated. When Insects would do shoots, they'd be released live at noon, and by 12:15, it was already being pirated, and the whole shoot was downloaded, and it was available in other countries. Like, there are people that have us pay for a subscription site just so they can then pirate it and strip all of the logo off of it. I do not see the wisdom in producing, because you have to work harder and harder for a smaller slice of the pie. And it's much harder to pirate a class. It's much harder to pirate writing. And also true, to be totally honest, I have been doing this for 9 years. I had talked earlier about the rapidly devaluing currency of women. And when you are young and fresh and vital and you're sitting on young pussy, that pussy is powerful. It's powerful. It can rule the world, but it has a ticking timeline on that pussy. And I can write and teach classes long after no one wants to see me naked. And that's the truth, is that as a woman, when you start to enter your 30s and your 40s, you're just not considered as desirable. I know that I'm a sexy bitch, but I'm going to invest in classes and writing, because that's something I can still do when I'm 55.
Yeah,
and you know, we're not all Nina Hartley. I love Nina Hartley. She's amazing.
She's amazing.
But most of us are not. I mean, I see people being so scathing to Nina. She's the crypt keeper. She should keep her clothes on. You know, I can't see that walking corpse. You know, suck one more dick. I'm like, that's incredibly hurtful, and that's the prerogative that men are giving of like, ugh, get that old pussy out of here. So classes and writing is where I'm now investing my energy. I'm currently writing a book, an intro to kink book, actually. It's something I'm really passionate about. I'm trying to, you know, I want to convert all the people. Here's a journey. Take this journey. It might not work for you, but it might work for you and be amazing. So you're never going to know until you give it a try.
Well, I cannot wait for that book to come out so that I can read it and share it with all the listeners. But we are at the end of our hour, and I want to respect your time. So I would love it if you could share with everyone how they can stay in touch with you and find you online, follow your writing, and see when you've got classes.
Sure thing. I am rangegray.com. That's my website. It's up now. I'm doing a pretty major relaunch of it, so I'll have classes separate. I'm going to start doing an advice column. I'll have my blog separate. I'm Rain to Gray on Facebook. I'm Rain to Gray on FetLife, and I'm Rain to Gray on Twitter. And on Facebook, FetLife, and Twitter, as well as my blog, I will have all the places that I'm doing classes or events. I'm not hard to track down. I am pretty easy. I am pretty easy, and I'm not hard to find online.
That was perfection. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all of your incredible stories and experience and perspective. This was an hour that just absolutely zoomed by.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, lady. I have lots of experience with radio and podcasts. I've been doing this stuff for years. Words are my thing, and I love the power of language. And I lose time when I start messing around with words. So yeah, this was a delight. Thank you.
Good. Well, I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. I will have all of Rain's links on the sexgetsreal.com website for this episode. So please check it out. Be sure to follow her on social media. And please, Rain, when your book comes out, let me know, because I want to let all the listeners know to check it out.
Deal. I will. Awesome. I mean, we should do this again sometime.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love that. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. I hope you have a great week. This is Dawn Sarah, and I will talk to you next time.